You're listening to the Liberty News Radio Network, and this is the Political Cesspool. The Political Cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, and here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
You can hear the kind of conversations we have with our guests off the air while they're waiting in queue. We had a wonderful, about a five-minute extended session with our correspondent down in Brazil talking about all of the unrest taking place in Brazil. How about us having on a guy from Brazil that's telling us exactly what's going on with Bolsonaro and Lula and the unrest? Very similar to January 6th.
And now we're going to swap to Brazil North with Steve King.
Well, that's right. We just had a laugh with Congressman Steve King. He spent 18 years. You know, Steve. Listen, I actually got a letter from the union here at Liberty News Radio that said if we have Steve King on any more often, we got to give him co-host pay.
I guess so. That means you get nothing.
I'm not for sale, you guys. Put me on the record.
Damn good thing because we don't have any money to pay.
One of the reasons we get along, I think.
But there he is, ladies and gentlemen, for the third time in as many months. He made his debut on the program back last week of he opened up the Christmas season last week of November. He was on with us again on Christmas Eve, no less, and now back here the second week of January, third time in 3 months, former United States Congressman Steve King. And Congressman, it is great to have you back for any occasion. There's been a lot going on in Washington since the calendar flipped to 2023, and you're going to help us navigate all of that fallout and handicap the winners and losers. Are you ready?
I think I am ready, but I'm never sure with you guys, so let's do our best.
Neither are we.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, in your opinion, how did all of the dust settle? So McCarthy is in, but at what cost? Prizes did those who are most...
It was the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah, most in line with our opinion get out of all of the horse trading that took place. We talked about a lot of this last week, but now that the dust has settled, how did it end?
Yeah, I want to be careful I conform with what I said to now General Scott Perry, who I think did a terrific job in there and came into his own. And we saw it publicly, and what was going on privately that has been related to me was just excellent with that man and many of the others that were there. I made this argument during the race for the speaker that, you know, you just go ahead and shoot Kevin McCarthy down. Those other guys that say they're stuck with him now and forever, that nobody else can do that job but Kevin McCarthy. Well, that's kind of a crazy statement. 330 million of us. He's the only one. So is he like the political messiah? Of course not. So they never offered an alternative other than McCarthy out of the 201 that were stuck with him. And so that kind of got pressured in that fashion. But I said, if you vote McCarthy out and say no speakership for you because of it's a character issue that didn't get raised enough, it was policy that got discussed. But if it'd been if they had voted him out, whoever they would have picked out of the corral, the Republican Conference corral, if that's what they decided to do, would have given them the same issues, the same rules that they were able to negotiate with McCarthy and probably more. So, but they did achieve that with McCarthy, and they got to a place where there were a handful, maybe even more than a handful, of, I'll say, left of moderate Republicans who were ready to cut a deal with the Democrats that if McCarthy, go ahead and let McCarthy win the speakership and may cut his deal for all these rules changes that they got. But then when his rules came to the floor, they were going to team with the Democrats, vote the rules down, and then pass the rules that Nancy Pelosi had probably in the previous Congress. And that would have then ended up with Kevin McCarthy as speaker and Nancy Pelosi's rules. So that's what happened with the 20. They came to that realization. They stuck together really well, given the pressure that was on them. And over a 2 or 3 vote iteration, once that began to crack, I came away with an important piece, which is the motion to vacate the chair. That's the most important one. That's the sword of Damocles hanging over McCarthy's head. It's the equivalent of a no confidence vote in a parliamentary system. And so, but even if you bring that motion, you still have to have a majority that were ready to remove him as speaker. And so that's the high test thing. And they got some things along there with the investigations and the special committees, and looks like they're going towards a church commission and intensive investigations. That's all good. They're bringing some bills that are not going to go anywhere, but they're good messaging bills that we should have voted on a long time ago. Looks like they're going to vote on a fair tax that would be abolishing the IRS. They already voted, I believe, to eliminate the 87,000 IRS agents. So they've got some things moving there that are messaging and speaking to the American people, even though those things are not going to become law. But in the end, it was going to be McCarthy as speaker, and they had to find the time there to cut the deal so they could get the best thing out of it that they could. And I understood this from what I saw C-SPAN-wise and the messages I was getting by phone call and by text. When it was all done, I had a long conversation from, I'll say, inside the camp to confirm that I've been interpreting it correctly along the way. So I'm proud of those people, and I want to make sure they knew that, because I'm the guy that last time we went through this, I said, I will sign this oath in blood. We need a blood oath so nobody cracks. Nobody else wanted to prick their finger, I guess. That's what, and it wouldn't do for me to sign theirs with my blood. So some of them cracked, and we gained some things, and we moved John Boehner out. And so that's, but they held together without that. And something that's really important, I think, for people to understand, I was surprised with this. The first vote that came down, 19 voted against McCarthy. And I got that text right away that said, well, we got more votes against McCarthy than we expected. I mean, they had surprised one or more people step in on that they didn't have counted on their whip card. So, and once they dug in, those people stayed. So I think we should look at those 20 as really strong stalwarts that brought about the changes that are the great beginning of turning that House of Representatives over to we the people and letting the regular members of Congress, the rank and file members of Congress, actually have a voice, where Nancy Pelosi and Kevin McCarthy had taken to a place where, as Chip Roy said, not one single rank and file member of Congress was allowed to even bring an amendment to the floor in 6 years. I've done six of them in one day. And pass them, by the way. So that's what they've done. They said leadership is going to make the decisions. You can come down. You're going to vote the way we tell you and go raise money and give it to the party, and then we'll use it against you if we think your politics are too conservative.
All right. I know Keith Alexander, Esquire, let's give you your proper title, wants to weigh in on this. There's so much to cover. We are just getting started with Representative King again tonight. But to his point here, the biggest of the concessions, and this is from The Hill. The headline reads, McCarthy concessions to win speakership raise eyebrows. Now, this is, again, the establishment news reporting, but it reads, Representative Kevin McCarthy was forced to give in to a series of demands from detractors to win the support necessary to win the speaker's gavel after an historic week of failed ballots. We talked about that last week. The changes, which were designed to empower rank-and-file members at the expense of his own leadership authority, are also raising concerns that they could cripple governing functions of the lower chamber. One change in particular, which empowers a single lawmaker to launch the process of ousting the speaker, is giving heartburn to lawmakers in both parties. Both fear a hardline group of conservatives will use it repeatedly to browbeat McCarthy into keeping crucial must-pass bills off the floor. I said this, Steve. I said this when people were still lamenting that the red wave didn't extend beyond Florida. I said, you know what? Hold on. Slow down. Wait a minute. This might be a good thing, maybe even the best thing, because the slim majority gives the Republican lawmakers closest to us on the issues more leverage than they would have had if the GOP had won more seats. Yes or no, am I right on that? We'll come back with that after the break.
Far more, you are right on that. That's a good topic. Thanks.
All right, we'll come back with that. Keith Alexander will get after it. So much more to come with the great Steve King, steveking.com. We'll be back.
Find your inner rebel at Dixie Republic, the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to DixieRepublic.com to view our Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through our extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in our Johnny Reb's Gun and Leather Shop. That's DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs. While you're waiting, drop by our Confederate Corner for a free cup of coffee and good conversation. Remember, there are no strangers here, just friends who haven't met yet. Dixie Republic, we're not just a roadside attraction, we're a destination for our people. For more information, visit DixieRepublic.com.
As you are aware, America is divided over every fault line possible. This is intentionally fostered by those who do not love God, family, or country. We believe a peaceful future as a free people absolutely depends on civility. Clarion Call for Civility is looking for funding and volunteers at every level to make our hopes and efforts a reality. Please donate, sign our pledge, and help us in our sacred cause. Please visit callforcivility.com for more details. callforcivility.com. Former Sheriff Richard Mack recounts in his book, The Proper Role of Law Enforcement, how he came to realize while working as a beat cop how wrong the all-too-common orientation of police officers is when they think of their job as being to write tickets and arrest people. Richard Mack tells of his personal transformation from by-the-number cop to constitution-conscious defender of citizen safety and freedoms. Learn what it really means to serve and protect. Purchase your copy at cspoa.org. That's cspoa.org.
Long live the king, said Keith Alexander. That was a Keith Alexander. You know, I've stolen so much from Keith over the years. So many quips, so much wit.
Well, I tell you what, Steve, it's wonderful to hear from you. We're glad you're like an embedded reporter in Washington, D.C., but unfortunately, I would liken that to being a skin diver for Roto-Rooter. But,
hey, I tell you what. We'll take him any way we can get him. And but you know, his we're about to turn up the heat as well, but 18 years in Congress, he's been through this so many times. But is there something new afoot here? We were talking about the fact that in an inadvertent blessing, perhaps it was, for people of our political persuasion, that the Republicans didn't win with a greater number than they did on election night in the midterms because of what took place last week. Tell us, well, your thoughts on that.
Well, I thought that the tighter margin gave the guys leverage that put up the fight. And if there'd been 240 or 245 Republicans, as McCarthy seemed to anticipate there would be, he would have had the votes to get reelected as Speaker. And the coalition of those that fought the battle the entire week long would have been essentially nullified, neutered. And so I will say that of some of those whom I talked to that are of the 20, I'll say that there were one or some who were actually praying for a tighter majority than was predicted because they knew they needed to change that operation. And I absolutely agree with that. I mean, if we were going to – so and one of the things that makes it so bad is that Kevin McCarthy was taking money from the Republican Party, raising money hand over fist for his own campaign account for multiple PACs that he controlled, and then using that money to go into congressional districts and Republican primaries and pick the rhino that he could manipulate that would vote for him for Speaker and use that money to trash the conservative that would have been one noble member of Congress that could have been in there standing with the 20 and eventually transforming things. I don't know how many seats he flipped that way from what otherwise would have been conservative to liberal, also I should say moderate, I guess, Republican, and also how many races were lost out there because he spent money on people that he really had to have to vote for him. There's say David Valadao out in California was absolutely going to vote for McCarthy. He put $13 million into his account. And I'm thinking of Joe Kent in Washington, where he put, I'll say a lot, I don't know the exact number, but lots of money in the account of Jamie Herrera Butler, who was, a McCarthy, which I'd say acolyte. And Joe Kent, rock solid, principled conservative, vocal, smart, former CIA guy. And he won the primary against Herrera Butler. But the best I can say for what Republicans did for him after that was he didn't get a lot of help and lost that race in a very close race. A guy like Joe Kent in there must be another 12 or 15 Joe Kents out there that were expunged by McCarthy's spending sprees against them and against also and failing to support the conservative candidates in Southern Illinois.
I was just going to say Blake Masters was one that comes to mind that McCarthy
right,
and yeah, in the Senate. Well, that would have been more Mitch McConnell, but, you know, together, mm-hmm. Yes.
That's a perfect example of what went on. Masters had to fight that, and essentially not quite on his own, but close. And then in the general election, he's moving up where he had a real shot at Mark Kelly, but McConnell wasn't there for him. And in Southern Illinois, Rodney Davis had held a seat down there for a few cycles, and he's a very nice guy. I mean, I like him a lot, but he was also, you know, to the left of center, and a favorite of the leadership, because in the chairs were all reflective of left of center, favorites of leadership. But he was thrown in with Mary Miller in a Republican primary, and Mary Miller, even in spite of the help they gave Rodney Davis as the moderate Republican, Mary Miller won that primary in Southern Illinois. And when she won that primary against Kevin McCarthy, then she's one of the voters that said, I don't want him for speaker. So some of those folks were I'll say, attacked financially, at least by McCarthy, that stood on the other side and said, I don't want him for speaker. I've been fighting him to get here. Why would I vote him for speaker when he didn't want me here? That would account for the freshmen that were in that list of 20 also.
Well, you know, the media coverage, you got to love the American media. It's just the who, what, where, when, and why of journalism. No bias whatsoever. Just the facts. I saw that the New York Times listed the 20 that you're mentioning, the House Republicans who were holding out and trying to, you know, get something for their constituents, whereas, you know, a lot of times that just doesn't happen. But the New York Times actually had a photographic chart of these 20, and they were categorized either as Black, Hispanic, or election deniers. I tweeted something about that out there. That's the truth. Well, so the dust has settled. McCarthy's in, but at a great expense. You know, some people
are going to be a church commission that will be able to actually operate and function.
Well, I sure hope that there is. And I think we have to watch this closely, because the thing that they didn't get, and I don't know that they negotiated very hard for it, was that to remove McCarthy's ability to veto any subpoena that's issued by any committee. And so if you're chair of a committee, first of all, you're likely handpicked by Kevin McCarthy in the first place. And I've watched that pattern and seen that come down and shut my agenda down through a committee chair that's looking me in the eye, giving me a promise. I'm going to do this because it's the right thing, and you've earned more than this. You're positioned for this. This is my obligation, and have Kevin McCarthy give the order in the back room and see that chair come back out and have to say, you aren't going to get my promise. Why not? They just aren't going to get it. I never got answers to that. But so that really dials down the investigations and takes the teeth out of it and turns it into the mushy Benghazi type hearing that we had in the last time around on that. But if McCarthy did not have that veto power on subpoenas, then the committee chairs could put the bit in their teeth and start dragging these witnesses in and building a record and really getting to the bottom of it. So I think it's going to be under question the whole time how much is constrained by McCarthy. And I'll have some ear into that. And by the way, these fellows like Scott Perry and Andy Biggs and Ralph Norman and so many others in there that stood their ground at the end, their instincts and their intellect and their experience tell them what's going on when that happens. And they will, raise the issue. They will make the points. Mm-hmm.
Let me ask you this question, Congressman King. Is this something that any Republican speaker would have done, or is this something that McCarthy – and look, McCarthy's McCarthy. He's no more, he's no less.
Political animal.
But is this something that he should get credit for, or is this something that anybody who filled the seat would have done? I'm reading the headline here now. Kevin McCarthy confirms House panel boot for Schiff, Swalwell, and Omar. So he's removed these three high-profile Democrats from their committee assignments. Is that anything that he should be lauded for, or is that just sort of like a baseline deal that you could have gotten out of anybody?
Well, I'm just not a fan of removing people from their committees. I just think that when voters elect you and your conference places you, to use that as a cudgel. I mean, look what they did to me for a misquote in the New York Times. They removed me from all of my committees, my own party. And in searchable history, no one who has been removed from their committees by their own party has ever survived a subsequent election. And all of those previous to me were convicted felons. And so he knew I wouldn't vote for him for speaker. There were other reasons in there. All of them were legitimate because I stood on every square. There was no vulnerability from an ethical standpoint that they could get at me, and I can guarantee you they were looking. So he brought that. So you decide that Omar cannot be seated in a committee because she said, well, it's all about the Benjamins. That's for, I didn't even know what that meant, except Benjamin Franklin is on a $100 bill. So it's all about the money with Jews is what
that's
the message
what
was
you know.
At least interpreted to be. Yeah, and so that doesn't trouble me a lot. That doesn't give me a bit of heartburn, actually. It's all about the money with McCarthy. So that, you know, tit for tat. But I do think, though, that that having Schiff on the Intel Committee, the Select Committee on Intel, that can't be. He's leaked and he's lied, and that's enough. So probably shouldn't even be in Congress for that matter. And it's, you know, to make those removals that way, negotiate it with Nancy Pelosi, get that done without press and fanfare, move them around a little bit, take Omar off of that committee, get her a couple other committees that she wants to be at. Just don't let her be in a foreign affairs committee where she's going to cause a lot of trouble because what appears to be a bias. And if she's on that, of all those that trouble me, I would let her be on foreign affairs because it's just one voice. And there's not a lot of
they
intel.
They need to have somebody that's willing to stand up to the state of Israel, quite frankly. And I would like to see her stay there just for that reason.
Well, let me ask you this about the committee chairs. On this very quickly before we go to a break, and then I want to come back with what the GOP can do, having control of the House but not the Senate or the White House. But this was from Anthony Sabatini. And Sabatini is a former state representative in the state of Florida who I like very much. The Lincoln Project, with this left-wing rhino-type outfit, wrote that 11 of the 17 GOP House committee chairs in the 118th Congress voted not to certify the results of the 2020 presidential election. And Sabatini said, fire the other six immediately. Representative King, 10 seconds response to that. I guess that's supposed to be a bad thing.
There you go, Sabatini. I like a guy that speaks up and makes it count.
That's right. We'll be right back with Congressman King.
Proclaiming liberty across the land. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Dave Collins. The White House says additional documents with classified markings were found in President Biden's Delaware home this week. White House lawyer Richard Sauber said he discovered the newest documents in a box initially found by the president's personal attorneys on Wednesday. Sauber noted that all of the pages were turned over to the Justice Department. Attorney General Merrick Garland appointed a special counsel earlier this week to review classified materials previously found in Biden's home and an office he used in Washington, D.C. So what would you do if you had the winning billion-dollar ticket from Mega Millions drawing last night?
I would retire.
My car just died yesterday. I had to buy a new car, so I hope I get lucky.
I can't even fathom how to even spend that kind of money, let alone have that type of money.
Well, somebody did win. The lottery ticket sold in Maine matched all six numbers, worth over $1.3 billion. They have not come forward yet. The CDC and FDA are looking into concerns that the Pfizer COVID vaccine causes strokes in those 65 and older. The CDC notes that overall the data suggests it's very unlikely there's a true clinical risk. School policies are getting strict about everything, including some things that seem really innocent.
According to a report from England, two schools there have banned students from having any kind of physical contact. Officials at the Highland School in Chelmsford, Essex, in England, told parents that students were not allowed to participate in any aggressive contact, which includes hugging or holding hands, saying that the school will not tolerate any physical contact. The school said they do wish children would make really positive friendships.
That's Corey Myers reporting. This is USA News.
So right now may be the perfect time for you to rethink how you pay for health care. And here's why. Not only is it open enrollment for a lot of people, it's also a time you can join MediShare and save even more than usual. And it's true, the typical family switching to MediShare saves $500 or more a month, which is obviously huge for a lot of people. But what's more, they like it. MediShare has double the customer satisfaction rate compared to health insurance. Double. There are 400,000 members. They've shared over $4 billion in medical bills. And it really is a great community, too. People encourage and pray for each other. And here's the thing. If you join MediShare Complete right now, they'll waive your new member fees, and you'll save an additional 10% off all of 2023. That's right. No fee to join. 10% off every month of next year, but it's a very limited time offer. You have to sign up before January 15th. Great savings, great health care. Find out more. Call now. 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
SteveKing.com, ladies and gentlemen, buy the book that Congressman King wrote, 18 years on the front lines of the political battlefield. He talks about his time in Congress, his vision for the future, walking through fire, my fight for the heart and soul of America. You want to know how Congress works and why we don't get further sometimes? It's in that book, that much I can tell you. Let's do a rapid fire segment with Congressman King. Let's line him up and knock him out of the park. The GOP has put forth a proposal to defund the 87,000 IRS agents that have been conscripted to terrorize American taxpayers. I'm reading now from the American media, which I should never do, but it reads, the House voted 221 to 210 to claw back more than $70 billion, or nearly 90% of the new funding for IRS, underscoring Republicans' opposition to the agency expansion and a desire to keep tax enforcement issues in the public eye. So, to me, Congressman, I think that's great messaging, but does it actually help us? And the reason I ask that is putting forth legislation like that is easy for the GOP to do right now in the House because they know it's going to get killed in the Senate. They look good to the base.
Is there anything they can do that would just give you, for example, the House of Representatives has total and complete control over without being undone by the Senate?
All right, keep that in mind, and I'll finish my question without really doing anything of consequence. Am I right about that? And to Keith's point, is there anything that they can actually do as a function of government that includes a Democratic control of Senate and White House?
There are some things they can do that have significant impact, but as far as passing legislation, it's messaging right now. I mean, all you can do if you cut out the funding that would fund the 87,000 IRS agents. And by the way, I had a briefing from an IRS agent that wanted to say that's not going to happen. And when I put him on the spot, he had to admit, yeah, the money's there and it could surely happen. They can just vote and say no fund goes to here. And you know that Mitch McConnell's not going to roll Schumer and the Senate. The president's not even going to have to veto it. But it's messaging. And what you can put at least on the calendar and say, well, next Congress, we've got this, we can do. But what they can do is investigate. They can call everybody before this Congress and put them under oath, and they can drill down and build the record, and they can make recommendations for prosecution. There's a whole plethora of subject matters they need to dig into. It's fine, pass this with an hour debate on either side, but it's not going to make a difference in policy for a long time.
But, you know, and that's fine if it goes nowhere in the Senate to an extent. I like the messaging. I'd rather, you know, have hardcore movement, but it is better than what came out of the House over the past 2 years under the Democrats. That's the $100 billion for Ukraine, comprehensive immigration reform, gun control, Juneteenth, D.C. statehood, the Equality Act, the George Floyd Act, all of the Porculus, $1.7 trillion, all of that. So that's, you know, not to mention
packing the Supreme Court.
We're already better than we were, but how about this one then? And this is a major improvement over the January 6th committee, establishing, this is a Republican proposal. Again, not going to go anywhere, but it does establish a difference between the two parties to an extent. Establishing a select subcommittee on the weaponization of the federal government. That passed 221 to 211. I think if they're going to investigate something, investigate these little nests of networks of progressive activists embedded within the bureaucracy, the FBI, the DOJ, the DHS, Congressman.
That's right. And that investigation has value. And putting people under oath has value. What they need to do, and I don't see it in the policies and the rule, but they needed to up the staff members that they had and hire them, targeting on the investigations that they want to do. I don't believe they have enough staff, and the expertise of that staff was probably trained to do defense against the Democrats for 4 years. So you need to go find fresh faces and good people that are committed and drill down into that. That's one of the best things that they can do, and I hope they do that. I know they're going to endeavor to do that, and you've got some people that are smart and driving that, like Scott Perry and others. They're going to help bring that out.
We're available.
I'm afraid they're going to draft me and put me back in that arena, make me like chief of staff or the judiciary staff or something. But I don't know if I want to lay awake that many nights.
I'm praying for it. Well, let me ask you this. When you were a member of Congress, yep. we did 18 years. You did 18 years in Congress. Now, but you were there between the years of 2017 and 2019. We're talking about great messaging, things that we would like to act on, but the Republicans know it's going to be spiked. And I'd be interested to know if the Republicans did have control of the Senate and the White House, if they would still be so bold. You were there in the years between 2017 and 2019 when the GOP controlled the House, the Senate, and the White House. Let me ask you this. Why didn't we get more done then? And did you advocate for the party being more bold and decisive when that window was open?
Oh, I absolutely did. And it was frustrating. To give you an example, I back up a better part of a decade. And when we won the majority back in 2010, I'm hammering, let's cut off all funding to implement or enforce Obamacare. And I've got John Boehner saying repeal and replace. I'm saying repeal, but cut off all the funding. I bring the amendment to cut off all the funding. John Boehner undercut me, and they cut a deal with the Senate to strip it out. They also said that they voted 66 times to pass my repeal of Obamacare during that flow of that period of time until we got to the time where it mattered. And then Paul Ryan wrote this convoluted Obamacare bill that I'll say even today he couldn't explain. And it was so convoluted that they couldn't get their votes to pass it. And it really wasn't repeal either. So they didn't want to repeal Obamacare. All they had to do was put up the repeal. He had a 40-word repeal. And it passed the House multiple times. It was really clear we had the votes to do it, but they wouldn't. They had to write their own version of Obamacare to attach to it. Second thing is funding the wall. And boy, that was Donald Trump's main promise. I sat down with Paul Ryan. It would have been in, let's say, probably late August, early September of 2018. And I negotiated with him or discussed with him. I need to be sure that you're going to make sure that the money's there for Trump to build his wall. And it was a one-on-one meeting, door closed, no staff. And when I got up, I said, I need to understand this clearly. This discussion is about the wall. And I'm hearing you tell me that you're committed to providing the funds for it. I want to hear it again. And he said, I believe that President Trump deserves the resources to secure the border. Well, it was within the context of building the wall, not securing the border. And I walked out of there thinking that's the best I got. But Paul Ryan thought securing the border was what, balloons and motion sensors and more staff down there, whatever. Mine was build the wall. And I said to them, if you give me, where's we were spending, $6.6 million a mile. For every mile to secure that border, we're losing 75% of those that tried. Now, if you give me $6.6 million to secure my West Mile out here in rural Iowa, there won't be a cockroach get across there. And so we're wasting a lot of money. And I went to Trump, and I said, Trump, you got to shut the government down if he doesn't give you the money before the end of September, because you're not going to get it if you don't have the showdown now. And he said, Paul Ryan promised me that we'll have the money December 7th, 2018. We know the answer to both. Republicans didn't repeal Obamacare, and Republicans didn't put the funding in for the wall. All of those commitments that were campaign promises, all they had to do was deliver those two, and they did not. They worked against them both. So take that to 2017 and 18. Those things happened, along with the heartbeat bill got killed right in that arena nearly the same time, when I had a full 100% commitment to bring that heartbeat through the Judiciary Committee and mark it up and have it at least where it had a chance to come up on the floor. And Kevin McCarthy ordered the kill of the heartbeat bill. So we didn't repeal Obamacare. We didn't build the wall. We didn't pass the heartbeat bill. And we lost the majority. And a big reason was because we didn't give our base a reason to vote for us.
Let me ask you this, Steve, real quickly. Who was really behind Obamacare? Was it Big Pharma? Was it someone else or some other organization? It's just a puzzle to me why we would have embarked on that.
Yeah, the people behind it, Big Pharma was one of them and one of the powerful force. The second component of that would be the health insurance industry in its entirety. And they were calculating this, that if you're going to require people to have a health insurance policy, and it's going to be funded by some of the other people's premiums. That's how Obama sold it, plus the government money that was coming into backfill. That was putting billions of dollars into the health insurance industry, the health insurance industry. And by the way, coming into that, they conflated these terms between health care and health insurance. After a while, you couldn't tell even if a Republican was talking about either health care or health insurance. But So that was the two big forces that came to play there. And I wanted to be able to sell insurance across state lines. I wanted to be able to have a catastrophic health insurance policy. I want to be able to set up a lifetime investment account so people could take money out of there to backfill their higher deductible on a catastrophic policy. We could have had a nation of millionaires by now. And they would have had a low premium catastrophic insurance paying their regular doctor bills and medical bills out of their pocket or even out of their health care policy. But none of that happens. Part of it is their brains don't go to thinking to the horizon, let around over. And the other one is they're taking their orders from the big donors. And the big donors wanted big money coming through the health insurance and the healthcare industry. And that's surely what they have now.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, one more segment with Steve King. SteveKing.com. You want to know how Washington operates? It's a real behind-the-scenes eye-opener. His book is written from a man who spent 18 years in the United States Congress.
Yeah, so I believe he knows. The king is dead. Long live the king. We're just proving that here.
He's back, and he's still doing great work. We're going to go to Texas with Congressman
TBC
King
family,
next.
It's James, and I've got to tell you that I sleep better at night knowing that there are organizations like the Conservative Citizens Foundation. The purpose of the Conservative Citizens Foundation is to promote the principles of limited government, individual liberty, equality before the law, property rights, law and order, judicial restraint, and states' rights, while at the same time exploring the dangers posed by liberalism to our national interests and cultural institutions. The Conservative Citizens Foundation also seeks to educate the public on the dangers of extremist ideologies like critical race theory and cultural Marxism. I've worked with the good people at the Conservative Citizens Foundation for many years, and their work comes with my complete endorsement. For more information and to keep up with all the latest conservative news headlines, please check out their website, AmericaFirst.com. That's MERICA1ST.com. AmericaFirst.com.
In message one, we said that Satan, the father of lies, John 8:44, gave the left evil, spiritual power the more they use the lies. The political left today is the beast. Now the Bible confirms that the dragon gave him, the beast, his power, Revelation 13:2. The extra evil spiritual power that comes from the beast by their lying is what accounts for the string of the leftist criminals in the government that have never yet been prosecuted. It also explains why American capitalists support communism in the 21st century. Note 1. That behavior of capitalists was predicted by Vladimir Lenin, a cell of the beast. Note 2. Henry Ford was a capitalist, and he would have never gone communist. The difference between Ford and the present-day end-time capitalists is that Ford was born and educated in the Kingdom of Christ, 19th century America, the New Jerusalem, Revelation 21.
Okay, we're going to let Steve King, someone who speaks legalese, break down this on our final segment. It's going to be dedicated entirely to Sheila Jackson Lees. That's a Democratic congressperson out of Texas. She's got a jigsaw puzzle looking piece of a district there near Houston Hobby Airport. She has put forth this week, Congressman, House Resolution 61, and I'm reading it now here in the studio. And it reads that it is a bill to prevent and prosecute white supremacy-inspired hate crimes and conspiracy to commit white supremacy-inspired hate crime in the United States. And I was talking with you earlier today. I said to me, and you correct me if I'm wrong, this appears as though it's that the Democrats would like to make discussion about demographic change, the great replacement, illegal. And what is a so-called white supremacist? Is that someone who wants to kill other people because their skin color looks different? Or is it someone who notices that these changes are occurring and doesn't believe that it's in the best interest of themselves and their family or of America? That is not defined. And would something like the conspiratorial aspects of this resolution ever apply to terrorist organizations like BLM or Antifa? It seems like any chronic malcontent, if this is passed into law, could hear something someone says that they don't agree with, get offended, and sue them on the grounds of this law, or even worse, put them in prison.
Only one way to correct this law, and that is to replace the word white with black and wherever it appears in this proposed law.
Well, what's going on here? I would hope the GOP House would spike this, but it does show, for all the people who would say, hey, listen, we never really get anywhere with the Republicans, this shows what the Democrats would do if they had an absolute majority of government. What's going on here with House Resolution 61, Congressman?
Well, it does, James, and I read this bill, too, and thanks for pointing it out to me. I would not have seen it if it hadn't been for you, but of course, I know Sheila and what she brings, and Sheila sees the world through the lens of racism, of what lens of race, and just the perspective of Sheila Jackson Lee. For example, I served with her for 18 years, 16 years on the Judiciary Committee. I've traveled the world with her, sometimes sitting across from me on long flights and going into places in the world. Uganda comes to mind. And I remember sitting in the bus, and we're going through Uganda, and Sheila's looking out the window, and she goes, "These are my people." I said, "Sheila, how do you know they're your people?" "Well, the answer is they look like she thinks her people look." And
set her out, put her off the bus and leave her there, and she'll find out in a hurry whether they're her people.
Yeah, well, that's right. And I would razz her, and my wife was along too. And I would tell her things like, and she was just opposed to the wall, opposed to the fence, and opposed to any kind of barbed wire. But Africa, the only place where you're safe is inside your own compound with a wall, broken glass, and a concertina wire on top. So I would point those out every time. "Sheila, what do you think of that? Those people, are they stupid? Or why do they build these things? It looks like they must work, huh?" And after, you know, about I don't know how many days of me relentlessly needling her, she said, "Well, would you treat your little sister like this?" And I said, "Well, I do, and she can stand up for herself." And so that was how that went. And then we were in Morocco, 40-foot high stone walls. And these stone walls were built. I would point to that as we're walking underneath, and I say, "Sheila, you see those walls?" "Yeah." "They were built by slaves. Did you know that?" "Slaves?" "Yeah, they were built by Christian slaves with Muslim masters. And then when they got done with them, first they emasculated them, so they didn't have their equipment to even urinate, let alone reproduce. And when they got done with them, they threw them off the wall or into the sea if they were pulling in the boats on their corsairs." So I'm telling her this, and I said, "Yeah, it was white Christian slaves." And so that needles her a little bit. So she writes the stuff anyway because that's how her mind works. And I look at this bill, and it says a white supremacy-inspired crime, which isn't defined in this bill in any way that I can find, but it's one that can be a thought crime, which you picked up on, James, a thought crime. It says if he motivated the planning, development, preparation, or perpetration of actions that constitute a crime. So that would be if he planned anything. And then it goes on and it says a conspiracy to engage in white supremacy-inspired hate crime, and it says that between two or more persons engaged in the planning, development, preparation, or perpetration. Well, okay, engaged in the planning. So that means that if somebody sat down with you in your studio and said, "You know what, I think we ought to go over here and do this this crime. Let's go graffiti the windows of the Black Lives Matter people." Okay, now you're both guilty of a white supremacy hate crime because you were engaged. You're one of two people engaged in the planning.
Okay.
That's how bad that is.
This is where I think it's at, and we've seen this before, but going back to 2015, let's just say, for instance, our friend, and he wasn't involved in this, but I'm just using this as a hypothetical, our friend Jared Taylor, who often cites FBI statistics on crimes committed by race. And then you have somebody like Dylann Roof who sees that and he says, "Boy, I better go up and shoot a bunch of unarmed elderly people in a black church." Well, then is Jared, who reported the FBI statistics on racial crimes, responsible for the actions of a murderer?
According to Sheila Jackson Lee, he is.
See, if this became law, I think you could connect those dots. So this is very dangerous. And I've got a question here now from an attorney friend of ours in Georgia, which I would love to have you answer. And he writes this: "James, can you ask Representative King if it would be possible to bring Congressperson Jackson Lee's bill to criminalize white speech to a vote? It seems to me," he writes, "that this would be a great embarrassment to the Democrats. It would make them have to either vote publicly to repudiate the very first of the Bill of Rights or to infuriate their anti-white racist African-American constituency. Will the Republicans ever play hardball like the Democrats?" That's a loaded and two-part question, but it's a good one. What do you say, Congressman?
Well, I do think it's a good question. It's the kind of tactic that I would like to exploit. But I don't know that it would embarrass the Democrats anymore. And
they're beyond being embarrassed.
Yeah, they are. And, you know, they voted 210 of them for a baby that survives an abortion, that you have to protect that baby and protect that baby's life and give them medical care. 210 of them voted against that. They voted that if a baby survives an abortion, or if a baby is essentially born and maybe a difficult birth, that the parents and the doctor, the mother and the doctor, get to decide whether that baby is going to starve to death or freeze to death. That's how bad that is. And so if a baby, a born baby that's crying and squealing and squirming, if that baby isn't a sacred human life, then, and they're not embarrassed by that, they're not shamed by that. I saw Jerry Nadler on the floor arguing why it was dangerous to take a baby to the hospital that maybe survived an abortion. Even Jerry Nadler had trouble making that argument. You could tell he was struggling. But I don't know if you put them on the spot. I don't know if you can get them embarrassed. I don't know that you can even, I think they would just go to the floor and do what they did over and over again.
That's why I say we need to take people like Sheila Jackson Lee and Steve Cohen out of Congress by redistricting or any other way that we can.
And you could do it. We talked about this during the break. You could do that if the Republican state legislatures in those respective states wouldn't mind being called a racist for removing people like that. But to the questioner's point, this is an effort to criminalize freedom of speech of whites, as far as I can see it, as far as I read it in the bill.
Well,
it is a repudiation of the Bill of Rights. Will the Republicans force their hand on this? Is this just their form of messaging? Many questions. Is this their form of messaging? Or could this pass?
Well, I don't think that there's a chance it would pass with a Republican majority, but I don't think they'd bring it up because they just don't want to. They don't want to have a risky thing out there. They don't know how it's going to break. But
does this get killed in committee? Does it die in committee?
Well, I think they just don't take it up. It doesn't get a hearing. It doesn't get a markup. It's just, I think it's probably dead, sitting back in somebody's drawer. But I think it's important to say this, that one of those provisions here says at least one of whom, these two or more conspirators, and one of them can just be a silent listener involved in the planning, at least one of whom published material advancing white supremacy, white supremacist ideology, antagonism based on replacement theory. Okay, so that might be, Jared Taylor could be accused of this. I write some op-eds from time to time, my words are published. So who defines who's publishing material that advances supremacy? They have defined white supremacy to actually be Western civilization, which is the foundation of the first world. And if you pull all those values out that built this first world, you've got the second world, which has murdered more people than anybody but the abortionists in all of history. And I mean that sincerely. That's where that shakes down. I should say violent death has been brought upon more people by abortion than any other method. The communist Mao and Stalin, between those two together, probably killed between 130 and 150 million people. But most of them were starved to death, so it wasn't a violent death. But abortion has killed the most. But in any case, the white supremacy piece of this gets tied to Western civilization. Who makes the decision? Southern Poverty Law Center. And I have faced those people and questioned them under oath, and they are some radical leftists that drive there. And by the way, they were run by.
Well, I don't have any faith, Steve, in the Republican Party. I don't
want to
sound like a pessimist, but I think that the people in the Republican Party, I've never heard any Republican say, I think this would be against the interests of my white Republican base, and therefore I'm going to vote against it. They would never say that. If you said this would go against the interests of my black constituents, every last one of them would jump on board.
Yeah, I think you got to go. Well, what do you think about that? Are they ever going to get to that point where, we got to actually, we look at the people who vote for us. Yes, we want all right-thinking people, regardless of race or creed, to vote for us. But at the same time, we got to look at who our voters are, and maybe we got to.
Why do people keep voting for people that do not want to even acknowledge that they have, they owe a debt to those people for voting them into office?
Yeah. Yeah. Who built this country? Who built this civilization? Who built the culture in America? And who fought the wars and who died? By the way, there are over 700,000 white Christian men in their graves today who died in the struggle that ended up putting an end to slavery and the battle over states' rights. And I had, in all of my time dealing with people, I never, and we've got the Congressional Black Caucus, we've got people that run race on their sleeve, the, especially the blacks do in Congress anyway, not once have I heard any of them say, thanks for that blood sacrifice. But they say instead, well, we want to be paid for the sweat of the people that we say were our ancestors, and you need to pay the reparations because you're white.
Yeah, well, that's one of the great Buchanan quotes. We've heard the grievances. Where's the gratitude? And there's it's been good. This situation has been good for a lot of people, but there's never any credit given. Only more IOUs, I guess you could say. Well, we said 30 minutes. We went an hour, and that doesn't even feel like enough. Congressman King, we can't thank you enough. Third time in as many months. Thank you for helping us navigate the fallout from D.C. in the last couple of weeks and for breaking down this bill, which is an odious piece of legislation, should it be brought to a vote or God forbid, passed.
It's startling but not surprising.
That's right. Well, hey, thanks for being one of the good guys.
Last word on this, it would be, go ahead. With reparations, blood is worth more than sweat. Pay for the blood first or shut up.
Absolutely.
Pay for Steve King's book first at steveking.com, and he'll even autograph it for you, I think, if you ask him nicely. Congressman, we'll talk to you again very soon. Not soon enough. Former GOP candidate for